After an hour, Rabbit cranked up the John Deere mower and began cutting the south end zone. There was, after all, a game to be played. Kickoff against Hermantown was 5 hours away. When Miss Lyle and the family began moving away from the tent, the players followed slowly behind. Workers quickly disassembled the tent and removed the tarp and folding chairs. The home benches were arranged in a straight line. The field paint crew, a highly experienced squad of boosters, began scurrying around, already behind schedule. They worshipped rake, but the field had to be striped and the midfield logo touched up. The cheerleaders arrived and began working furiously to hang hand-painted banners along the fence around the field. They tinkered with a fog machine to enhance the team's dramatic entry through the end zone. They looped hundreds of balloons around the goalposts. Rake was only a legend to them. At the moment, they had far more serious matters to think about. The band could be heard in the distance on one of the practice fields, tuning up, practicing maneuvers. Football was in the air. Friday night was rapidly approaching. At the front gate, the former players shook hands and hugged and made the usual promises to get together more often. Some took quick photos of the remnants of old teams. More hugs, more promises, more long, sad looks at the field where they once played under the great Eddie Rake. Finally, they left. The 87 team met at Silo's cabin a few miles out of town. It was an old hunting lodge deep in the woods on the edge of a small lake. Silo had put some money into it. There was a pool, three decks on different levels for serious lounging, and a new pier that ran 50 feet into the water where it stopped at a small boathouse. Two of his employees, no doubt master car thieves, were grilling steaks on a lower deck. Nat Sawyer brought a box of smuggled cigars. Two kegs of beer were on ice. They drifted to the boathouse, where Silo, Neely, and Paul were sitting in folding lawn chairs, swapping insults, telling jokes, chatting away about everything but football. The kegs were hit hard. The jokes became raunchier, the laughter much louder. The steaks were served around 6. The initial plan was to watch the Spartans play that night, but not a word was said about leaving the cabin. By kickoff, most were unable to drive. Silo was drunk and headed for a very bad hangover. Neely had one beer, then switched to soft drinks. He was tired of Messina and all the memories. It was time to leave the town and return to the real world. When he began saying goodbye, they begged him to stay. Silo almost cried as he hugged him. Neely promised he would return in 1 year to that very cabin where they would celebrate the first anniversary of Rake's death. He drove Paul home and left him in the driveway. "Are you serious about coming back next year?" Paul asked. "Sure, I'll be here." "Is that a promise?" "Yes." "You don't keep promises." "I'll keep this one, Paul." He drove past the lanes and did not see the rental car. Cameron was probably home by now, a million miles from Messina. She might think of him once or twice in the coming days, but the thoughts would not linger. He drove past the home where he'd lived for 10 years, past the park where he'd played youth baseball and football. The streets were empty because everyone was at Rake Field. At the cemetery, he waited until another aging ex-Spartan finished his meditation in the dark. When the figure finally stood and walked away, Neely crept through the stillness. He squatted low next to Scotty Reardon's headstone and touched the fresh dirt of Rake's grave. He said a prayer, had a tear, and spent a long moment saying goodbye. He drove around the empty square, then through the back streets until he found the gravel trail. He parked on Carr's Hill and for an hour sat on the hood, watching and listening to the game in the distance. Late in the third quarter, he called it quits. The past was finally gone now. It left with Rake. Neely was tired of the memories and broken dreams. "Give it up," he told himself. "You'll never be the hero again. Those days are gone now." Driving away, he vowed to return more often. Messina was the only hometown he knew. The best years of his life were there. He'd come back and watch the Spartans on Friday night, sit with Paul and Mona and all their children, party with Silo and Hubcap, eat at Renfro's, drink coffee with Nat Sawyer. And when the name of Eddie Rake was mentioned, he would smile and maybe laugh and tell a story of his own, one with a happy ending. This is John Grisham. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Bleachers. This program was produced and directed by John McElroy, executive producer Dan Zitt, and special appearance by Jack Crystal. Text copyright 2003 by John Grisham. Production copyright 2003, Random House, Inc., all rights reserved.